Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle here with my friend Alfonso Rachel. This is the Virtue Signal made possible by the new membership drive we had in January by the new members at BillWhittle.com and, of course, the long-term members who've been with us from the beginning. So a couple of shows ago, we were recording. I don't know if it was in the moments before we got on tape or whether we were recording or not, but I do remember this. I remember you saying that slander is one of the worst things you can do to somebody, maybe in fact be the worst thing you can do to somebody other than inflicting physical harm on them. Bearing false witness, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Bearing false witness is an especially painful thing. I know it's happened to me, and I know it's happened to you. In the case where it's happened to me, which is probably once or twice really, it's an especially red hot kind of a dagger, because it goes to something that's very precious and very hard to build and maintain, and that is your character, your reputation, your honor. When somebody comes in and destroys the credibility and the integrity that you've spent a lifetime building up, that hurts a lot worse, much worse, than having somebody call you out for something that you actually did.
Definitely, man. You know, and that's why slander itself, like when you look at the Ten Commandments, a lot of people think that the commandment is to not lie. Lying is not the problem, right? You can actually mm-hmm. lie and save somebody's life. You know, like, you know, hey, you got mm-hmm. You got any Jews in there? No.
Yeah, do these pants make me look fat? No, honey. Yeah. Now you're lying to save your own life.
Amen, right? Not that we have those problems. We don't have to tell our wives that. Now, y'all be looking good.
Speaking hypothetically.
Right? But the key is to not slander. That's what the word breaks down to. It's like, thou shalt not bear false witness. Because, yes, just like we said, the worst thing you could do to somebody without touching them is slander them. And these things, they lead to murder, you know, ultimately, right? When you slander somebody. But, you know, in other ways, you can destroy a relationship, destroy a business, destroy friendships. Destruction, you know, is surrounded by slander. So, you know, that being said, it's really bad news. And that's one of the things, especially as far as the Democrats goes, that's like their biggest weapon. And one of the biggest cannons that they have in that slander array is the charge of racism. And they know how to use that gun really good. And unfortunately, with a lot of Republican voters, they walk around almost with like signs held up that says, fire that cannon right here, and then want to complain about the race baiting issue, right? So it's like, word to the wise, don't make yourself an easy target for the slander array of racism.
Well, I don't need to get too much into all the details, and people have been listening to me for a while know most of this story. But basically, this happened to me several years ago, and I don't know how many hours there are of me just speaking spontaneously on the internet without a script, but it's easily in excess of 5,000 hours.
Wow.
I know some people think that that's just a couple shows is 5,000 hours of me talking, but nevertheless, it's a lot. Mm. And as you said, it's a strategy of the left to do everything they can to slander and libel people in order to destroy their credibility and their effectiveness. And I think that they on some level appreciate that the thing it really destroys is it destroys that person internally. It really is very, 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 very damaging. Mm. So somebody at Media Matters, which is paid for by George Soros, which hires a bunch of people to basically listen to every single word that I say, that Alfonso says, that Steve Crowder says, Ben Shapiro, they take a look at transcripts of every word we've ever basically said, and they look for sentences that are problematic. And they put those things together, and then they stack them up, and then they put them in a memo, and then they email them out and try and get it canceled. And that's exactly what happened to me. Mm. I was doing an interview with Stefan Molyneux. We were talking about The Bell Curve, which is a book that deals with intelligence as components to race and how much of it is inherited and so on and so forth. And we were discussing that book. And of the 5,000 hours of me, the thing that they used to slander and libel me was a number of responses to questions about that book were taken, where sentences were taken out of context, and then basically distributed. And when I was confronted about this by people on our own team, they said, did you say this? Did you say that black people in inner cities are unemployable? I said, yes. I said, they're unemployable because it has been the strategy of Democratic politicians to keep them in such a state of dependency that there is absolutely nothing other than these people can do.
Yes.
It's a form of slavery, and I basically elaborated the whole thing. And they weren't interested in that. And so even though that episode cost me a significant amount of money in terms of lost speaking opportunities, which I suspect I might be paying for to this day, the lost income was nothing compared to this red hot poker of seeing my name in newspapers, making assertions that I didn't make based on one person pulling things out of context. And just to wrap up this sad story, it took me several days before I had the courage, because I just wanted to crawl under a rock.
Yeah.
It took me several days before I had the courage to go back and look at the actual tape that these things had pulled from. And when I saw what I had said on both sides of this incriminating sentence that not only qualified the sentence, but actually meant that the sentence they took was pretty much the inverse of what I was saying, I practically cried from relief. It was so painful that I actually thought, my God, I must be a horrible person. I can't believe I actually said that. Turns out I didn't. Mm-hmm. But it was such a traumatic experience that, well, it still stays with me. I don't think I'll ever get over it.
Now, and the thing is, Bill, where the slander is concerned, you just nailed it, man. When I'm talking about how conservatives invite the slander cannon, you just proved that there is systemic racism, right? You know it. It's like where blacks are in these areas where they're not employable, who has influence over them? Who has fabricated this environment for them to be in where the unemployment rate is just unacceptable. High school dropout rates, incarceration rates, single parenthood, teens. This is set up. It's engineered that way. While you have conservatives keep saying there's no such thing as systemic racism. I'm like, what are you doing? Stop it. You should be out there saying exactly, when you get the slander charge of Democrats accusing of systemic racism, Republicans should be like, you're absolutely right.
One. And we've been fighting against your Democratic systemic racism since there's been a Republican Party.
Amen. You know, white privilege, stop saying there's no white privilege. Yes, there is. Stop saying, you know, when they're accusing you of these things, that there's no systemic racism, or when they say there's systemic racism and there's white privilege, tell them, just help them to fall on their own sword with that. You know, be the matador that leads the bull right into a heap of its own dung.
It's interesting you say that because in the research I'd done prior to making that statement, I had taken a look at a number of Democratic politicians in the city of Detroit, and libraries had been utterly abandoned, and the roof has caved in, and people have gone in there and stolen the copper out of the walls and stolen the light bulbs, and the only thing they didn't steal was the books. And you see this ruin in Detroit, and you see the violence, and you see the desperation. And that's something everybody knows. But what I found out was that there was, just as one example, there was a city commissioner, Democratic city commissioner, black Democratic city commissioner, who took education funds for Detroit and used it to buy a brand new Lincoln Navigator. And he ordered the Lincoln Navigator with black leather seats, but the one that came had gray leather seats. So he ordered another one and paid $1,500 to expedite the delivery of the second Lincoln Navigator that was coming from the funds that were designed to go to repairing schools and this sort of thing. And this is why you spend $15,000 a year per student in Detroit, and the average reading ability is 6 or 7 grade levels below where it should be. It's got nothing to do with the people in school. It's got everything to do with the people that run the schools. And so I think really, I didn't really expect that this episode would go in this direction, but now that I think about it, this slander is the entire weapon of the left. Everything they've accomplished in terms of destroying this country has come about as a result of slandering honest people who are not racist, not misogynist, they're not homophobes, and they're not Islamophobes, they're none of those things. They're people who have legitimate concerns about specific issues. And by slandering them, they have caused them so much pain, embarrassment, humiliation, And not to mention financial consequences, that they do what they were supposed to do in the first place, which is just shut the hell up.
Yes. Yeah. And if I can just kind of on that note and kind of a side trail, you know, when I decided that I wanted to explore politics and my because I wasn't always a Christian, man, borderline atheist, but more agnostic than anything else. And how I got into that was I remember a long time ago. What was that? I think it was Damien. And there was a line in there, and it was something to the effect of, when Satan comes, he's not going to come in a way that you think he's going to come. He's going to rise through politics, right? Now, that, mm-hmm. that, you know, that was just a, you know, something for entertainment at the time. But then when I started to have like more discourse, you know, with, you know, my musician friends who are, you know, who tend to lean to the left, mm-hmm. and it just came down to the question, you know, this is like, you know, back in the 90s, and I'm like, well, why are you a Democrat? Right? Because I was a default Democrat too, right?
Sure.
And I'm like, why are you a Democrat? And rather than telling me their platform of Democrats, they just started accusing Republicans. Well, Republicans are this because Republicans are that. And I'm like, okay, yeah, but you haven't told me why you're a Democrat though. You just told me why you hate Republicans, but you haven't given me anything that you stand on as a Democrat. And from there, that really stuck with me. It's like, man, all you guys do is accuse Republicans all the time. And then when I found, you know, start flipping through the Bible for another reason why I started flipping through the Bible. When I found out that the name of Satan means the accuser, it made sense. Like I said, starting when he said, like that movie, he'll rise through politics. And then I put those two together. I was like, oh, snap, that is the full-on weapon of the Democrat Party. Slander. They slander. And as the word says, you are, because Jesus is talking to the Pharisees, you know, talking to the Jews. And he's like, you're of your father, the devil. Not calling the Jews the devil, but I'm saying that those who refuse to see this truth, and that could be anybody, before anybody accuses us of being anti-Semitic, mm-hmm. right? It could be anybody. If you refuse to see the truth when it's standing right in front of you, then you are of your father, the devil, and the sins of your father you will do.
You know, the power of that slander and the length that it's been going on and the magnitude of it really does almost boggle the mind. P.G. O'Rourke is the guy who really got me into conservatism because he was just so funny and cool and loose, you know, kind of swinging kind of guy. And he talked, and this is back in the 80s, he wrote that he'd been in the worst places in the world. He'd been in, you know, he'd been in Syria. He'd been in villages in the poorest parts of Africa. He'd been in totalitarian states. He'd been everywhere, and he said the most scared he'd ever been was in a housing project in New Jersey, and the power of that slander is so strong that the reason I bring up what PJ said is that you could make a pretty good case that there are very few places in the world that are quite as bad as these inner cities that have been allowed to decay into no-fly zones of just violence and murder and mayhem. And the point I'm trying to make here is, how effective does that slander have to be for people to live in those kind of conditions for three or four generations and still continue to vote for the people that made these places so horrible in the first place? In other words, if you're living in that kind of a hell and you keep voting for the people who have created this hell, it wasn't hell before Baltimore. Worst parts of Baltimore used to be working class neighborhoods, white and black people living together, going to the same church, walking to the same parks. Wasn't like this. But if situation gets so horrible and so desperate and you are still not willing to try something different, then the slander against the opponent is so powerful mm-hmm. that it's going to keep you in this condition apparently forever.
Indeed, man. And the thing about slander itself is it's a creative process, which means that you're operating from a basis of imagination. And that's what a lot of people are given over to. That's what we're dealing with a lot right now, Bill, is we're dealing with people who are given over to their imaginations rather than reason. And you can see these people in these conditions, and it's like they're constantly, you know, feeling like we're being treated like second-class citizens. We're being treated by less than human. Well, yeah, you're being treated that way by people in power who historically disqualify a person's personhood, right? I remember... you know, even my wife, when we were first getting together, and you know, she was telling me, my wife, you know, she's it's like I get to be the celebrity, but she's smarter than I am. But when I would go through my cynicism, as we spoke about earlier, about voting because of not trusting and stuff like that, and she says, you don't want to be a person who doesn't vote. You want to stay out of the process, and we can end up going back to a point where, you know, because there was a time where blacks and women didn't have the right to vote. And if you forego that, then you're just doing the Democrats a favor, because that's how they've always wanted it in the first place. And so you've got these people who will use the case of, well, they shouldn't be able to vote and they should be in the field and stuff like that because they're not people. Well, that is a slanderous accusation against us, right? That's a straight up falsehood to bear that witness against us, to say that we're not human, to keep us in this block. Well, like I said, that's based in imagination. And you can see Democrats are obsessed with imagination today, right? That's all they talk about. We need to reimagine this. Imagine all the people. Imagine, they love that song. Everything they talk about is imagination. And you have to imagine things in order to slander somebody. And when we've been telling them, Bill, they disqualify personhood, whether you're the slave or whether you're the kid in the womb. And now we see it today in the trending word of being depersoned. The Democrats are
canceled
persons, right? The Democrats are, and we keep treating this like it's a new thing. And it's like, Bill, I keep trying to say, man, this is not new with them. This is not some new Democrat party. This is who they've always been. And they're out there in full on plain sight. And like I try to tell people, the Democrats who found that the KKK, why do you think the KKK calls themselves the Invisible Empire? They can do this thing in plain sight. Mm-hmm. And people will be like, nyong.
So this is the point in the show, ladies and gentlemen, where I throw my shoulder out of the joint by patting myself on the back here, by demonstrating just how virtuous I am. But to tell you an actual true story, just a couple days ago, I was working on one of the Moving Back to America shows, and I'd gone to see an article that was current from Instapundit, and from that article, I went to another article. And these two articles together, one of them was about a transgender professor who was calling for burning of this book that was talking about the dangers of treating children as if they're ready to make their gender decision. Mm. And I had put this thing together. I'd made a great case. I'd recorded it. I had edited it. I had it tight. It was fantastic. I was grabbing the graphics to put in there to show the headlines that I was making this case for. And when I got to the headline about the professor who called for the burning of the book, I saw that the date on that story was November of 2020. And then I had a decision to make. First of all, he did say it. Not inventing that. I'm not slandering the guy. Secondly, November 2020 is not the same as November 1983. So there was that defense. And in the end, I decided I wasn't going to do that. I was just going to take that entire connection out. And the reason I decided to do that was because it seemed to me that if this story happened in mid-2020, then at this point, whatever flack this guy has gotten for it, he's gotten for it. It's old news. I'm not going to reignite this flame despite the fact that everything about it was factually true and despite the fact that I think he certainly deserved it. It seemed to me to be unfair. And if I had known about the date of that story, I wouldn't have put it in there in the first place. Now, I happen to think that's a form of integrity, and the reason that I go to that trouble, and the reason I tell this story, frankly, is because sometimes you can actually tell the truth about people, and not only tell the truth about people, but tell the truth about people who deserve it, but you can do it in an unfair way. And to me, that seemed close enough to a cheap shot that I wasn't willing to take it. And the main reason I wasn't willing to take it is because I didn't want anybody to take that kind of shot against me. Mm. Now, we all know from experience that's not going to slow them down or stop them. But at some point, you do have to have your own internal standards. You do have to be able to go home and sleep at night. You have to be able to face yourself in the mirror. You have to be able to face your wife and your ancestors and God and all the rest of it. And so there is a lack of integrity. There's a lack of honor in slandering people, obviously. And on some level, though, maybe we can close on this. There's a fundamental lack of humanity in somebody who is willing to slander somebody. For somebody to for them to put together that that page I mentioned earlier, these quotes taken out of context, for them to have assembled that, they had to have read the transcript of what I actually said. Mm-hmm. They had to go in and lift these things and put them in a certain order. So it's not like they could actually think that I'd said these things. They knew at the time that they were taking things and manipulating them in such a way as to create an impression. And they did, and it created a big stink out of it. And there's something fundamentally inhuman about that. It to me, when I think about somebody doing that, I think the same way of them as I think of people who, you know, try to put cigarettes out on mice, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, what kind of person could consciously do that? If I said something about somebody that wasn't true, I would apologize and I'd acknowledge the error. But to do it intentionally is pretty low.
And what's scary about that, Bill, is that they think they're doing a good thing. That's what's so mm-hmm. scary about it. It's one of those things where, you know, you can look at the truth. Just like we said, man, you can look at the truth. It's right there. But you're just going to go ahead and omit the truth, and you're going to just imagine. It is imagination, but for them, it is the truth. And it's that, you know, the word says, woe to those who don't know bitter from sweet, who see good as evil, evil from good, light from dark, bitter from sweet. The word says that. And we're living in those days where there's no excuse to not see that anymore. And which reminds me, Bill, a lot of these things that we're dealing with, these are not new things. Right?
As the
word says, you know, there's the only thing that's different is that is our technology to be able to do it, I guess, more efficiently. But, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. But Bill, we're in a generation where there's no excuse to not see it anymore. It's like we've gone, how many times do we need to go around with this? And we have access to see how this plays out every time, how this has gone on through history. In real time, we can see it happen in other places in the world. We're watching it happen. There's no excuse to not keep doing these things.
That's a great thing to close on, Zoe. As I've said before, all of the damage that the left has done to this country they have accomplished through power that we have given them. They have no power over us. They only have power over our conscience. They have power over our sense of reputation, power over our sense of character. And a slander that might have made it into the local news now can make it into the worldwide news. And people are terrified of being in the spotlight that the internet provides and facing charges of things that they didn't do. And this fear is what empowers the left, who manufacture this out of whole cloth. They know full well what they're doing. They can be so compelling at it that, as in the case of me, and I'm fully aware of who they are and what they are. There were two or three days there when they had me convinced that I was this horrible person that they made me out to be. I had to go back and read the transcripts to find out that, no, this was a constructed lie. But understanding the process and understanding the strategy is really the only way we're going to get out of this. There's going to have to come a point, folks, because they're not going to stop slandering people. They're not going to stop lying about us. They're just not. So the only way that we can go forward seems to me to be twofold. We either acquiesce to this form of blackmail, in which case we lose the country and we deserve to, or we develop the kind of thickness of skin to say, I know it's not true. The people that love me know it's not true. God, if you believe in God, knows it's not true, and it's not true. And then proceed according to your conscience, despite the fact that people are lying about you and using your conscience as a weapon against you. Anything you want to add to that before we wrap this up?
Only an amen and a right on.
Okay. When you get to the pearly gates, and by the way, I'm pretty sure you're going to make it. Which one of those two are you going to use first?
Man, I imagine that I am going to be speechless, but I'll tell you what, man, as nice a guy as I appreciate you think I am, I don't have the clout to be able to say, hey, this Bill guy is a nice guy, you want to let them in. But I know a guy who's got
some, put in a word for me?
Who can put in a really good word for you.
I appreciate that. I'm just curious to know if St. Peter opens the gates and the golden gates open, you walk through with your wings and your harp and stuff, and St. Peter says, Alfonso, Rachel, welcome unto heaven. I'm just curious to know if you would say amen or right on. But I guess we're going to have to wait. Maybe you can send me a message from the afterlife on that one. You know what? On second thought, I don't want to be haunted by you. I don't need that at all. So anyway, folks, that is going to do it for this edition of the Virtue Signal with my good friend and colleague, Alfonso. Rachel, you've been asking for him for years. And we had a membership challenge and we met it. So here he is. And we're looking forward to doing more with him in the future. For everybody here at this small little company, thank you very much for your membership. Thank you for your support, certainly. And on behalf of Alfonso, Rachel, and myself, we'll see you next time right here on the Virtue Signal.